Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Hello, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They may be athletes. They may be authors, speakers, virtual assistants. They can be practically anyone, but these are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they're here to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today, it's an important one. It's a brand new year. It's a brand new month. And I think a lot of us are looking for ways to just kind of really fast-track ourselves and do it with ease and grace. So our topic today is how to own your day and control your life with Craig Ballantyne. Now, Craig is the author of The Perfect Day Formula and Turbulence Training, and he has been a contributor to Men's Health magazine for over 17 years. His books, videos, and coaching programs have transformed the lives of over 7 million people physically, financially, mentally, and emotionally in the last two decades. And today he teaches high-performing entrepreneurs to increase their income and make more time for their personal lives, so important, using the same five pillars of success that allowed him to overcome crippling anxiety attacks and transform his own life. Craig, hello. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Denise. This is going to be so much fun.
You know, I've told you this in the green room and through email. I have followed you around for quite a while. I'm a lurker. I've been lurking and following how you do things. And I mean, it's pretty amazing the things that you have accomplished, and I can't wait for you to share some of this with our audience.
Yeah, I've had a real fortunate ride, and I'm really looking forward to talking about some of the stuff that I've learned through my ups and downs.
Well, before we get going, is there anything that I may have neglected to, you know, kind of introduce our audience to? And if not,
that was perfect.
Take it. Oh, good. It sounded good, didn't it? So what do you want to share today? Because, like I said, it's a new year. It's a new month. I don't know about you. I don't do resolutions. I find that, you know, it's just a good way to beat myself up 3 months down the road. But I do set goals, and I know you talk a lot about goal setting.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great point that you make, that a lot of people do set resolutions and kind of beat themselves up on it because they don't accomplish them. Or, you know, I think what most people struggle with is they don't set things that really matter to them. And a lot of times we are impacted by society. We think, oh, maybe I need to say that I'm going to lose weight, when it's not something that you really care about right now. You have so many other things going on. And so people need to understand that one of the important parts about setting resolutions or setting goals is making sure that they matter to you. And I've talked a lot about goal setting recently, and I'd love to share a little system that I have for making sure that those goals are turned into reality.
I am ready with my pen and my notepad, and I just scooted a cat off the desk, so go. I'm ready.
There you go. Okay, so actually, I go all the way back about 12 years ago when I was a young, ambitious man, and I would sit down on New Year's Eve, and I remember sitting down on one particular New Year's Eve. I was going to a wedding that night, on a New Year's Eve wedding, and I sat down and I wrote down a full page of goals in 10-point font on a computer screen. Now, that just filled up. I think there must have been 20 or 30 goals that I had. And I call this the shotgun scattered approach to setting goals. And then, you know, a year went by, and I looked back on what I had set. And I had accomplished a few minimal things, some of the smaller goals, but I was left feeling empty because I hadn't hit the big goals. And then it was right around the time that I started talking to one of my mentors, a guy named Mark Ford, who wrote a whole bunch of books under a pen name, Michael Masterson. And he said to me, Craig, you set too many goals. You really should only set a few goals, one for your health, your wealth, your social self, and your personal enrichment. I thought, that's really good. And then I decided to go one step further. And the way that I teach goals, Denise, is that we, instead of saying something, we're going to do something for 2018, instead we choose a shorter time period. We want a shorter time period because 2018 is kind of abstract. You know, you wake up on January 1st and you say, oh my goodness, you know, this year I want to, you know, lose 10 pounds or I want to make an extra $50,000 or $100,000 this year. Well, that's great, but there's no real deadline. And if there's no real deadline of that something that can spur you to action, then you're not going to take action. So that's why I help people set 90-day goals, basically like quarterly planning that you do for your business. You should do for yourself as well. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. That's why I said, you know, 2-3 months down the road, you're kicking yourself in the fanny because none of it was really important. It was too vague. It's more of a wish list or, I maybe kind of sort of should do this. But there's no urgency. And I've seen myself fall in that trap, you know, all the time. And I see people fall into it all the time. Of course, this is why, you know, gym memberships just peak, you know, this time of year. And then 3 months down the road, they're trying to get rid of everything, all their sports equipment on Craigslist.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. So what I teach people to do is to set just one major goal for their personal life and one major goal for their professional life in the next 90 days. So it might be that you want to spend more time, maybe you want to read the Bible in the next 90 days, you know, so that's a personal goal. And then maybe you want to write a book, and that's your professional goal. So you have those two goals in mind. In the next 90 days, I'm going to do these things. Now, those are what are called outcome goals, and we don't necessarily control our outcome goal. Although I'm going to go back to the weight loss example because that's a real simple one that everybody can understand. So imagine you said you wanted to lose 10 pounds in the next 90 days. That's a numbers-based outcome goal. Everyone can understand that. Now, you know, you don't necessarily control when you step on the scale in 90 days from now if it's going to be 10 pounds, it's going to be 12 pounds, it's going to be 9 pounds. You know, you might have had some water retention. You might have, have a faster metabolism. You might have a slower metabolism. You can't beat yourself up on the exact number on the scale. But here's the thing. For every outcome goal, we can set what are called process goals or action steps that we fully control. Because, again, we don't fully control the outcome, the number, whether it's losing weight or making money. We don't fully control that number, but we control the things that we can do to get us as close as possible to those outcomes. So for the weight loss example, it might be that you go to the gym 3 times per week and you control that. That's a process goal that's fully within your control. And you might have another process goal that you follow this specific diet 80 or 90% of the time. And that's another one that you can fully control. And then your third process goal might be that you drink 3 liters of water per day. And if you do those three things, you're going to get as close as possible to your outcome goal. And that's the same thing for reading the Bible. You can set aside 15 minutes every day, an extra hour on Sunday, and then maybe listen to some of the Bible on audio in the car on the way to work. Those are three process goals that you can fully control in order to read the Bible in that certain amount of time. And if you wanted to write a book, you could set up so that you spend 30 minutes writing every morning, first thing in the morning, and you spend 60 minutes writing on Saturday morning, and that you check in with an editor every week and give them your content so that they can review it and give you feedback. And those are three process goals that you control on the way to your outcome goal. So everybody that's listening right now, what I want you to do is take out a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. On the left-hand side, you're going to write down your number one personal goal for the next 90 days. On the right-hand side, you're going to write down your number one professional goal for the next 90 days. And then under that, you're going to make 3 lines, and those are going to represent your process goals, your action steps to get you to those outcome goals. So you write down your personal outcome goal at the top on the left-hand side. Now you write down your 3 action steps. Then you go over to the right-hand side and you write down your professional goal for the next 90 days. And then you write down 3 action steps underneath. And remember, you control those action steps And you should get an accountability partner for that, because that's a real secret ingredient to success. And now you have your quarterly plan. So it's so much better to have your goals in a quarterly plan rather than to have an annual New Year's resolution. Because, Denise, there's so much clarity and concrete action steps in this 90-day plan. Is that helpful?
It really is, and I'm glad that you're bringing up writing a book, because I am writing a book, and I have to tell you, Craig, I've got this, and I've done this multiple times with this book. I have an epic, gorgeous blank page. It's killing me. It's epic. It's going to be and I've got the outline. I've got a lot of it done, but for some reason, and I think you just dropped into my head what the problem is. I didn't really set a deadline on it. I just said, well, I'm going to do this. And, of course, it didn't get done because other things got in the way, took on too many clients. You know, all the excuses I can give you, I can give. But the truth is I just didn't set any daily process goals, and I like that, those action steps. I didn't do that. I didn't put it in my calendar. You know, just, okay, I'll do it on Saturday. Saturday rolls around, and I don't want to. So off we go again.
there's a couple of things.
I love the accountability partner, but keep on going, because this is good stuff.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that you mentioned there. So let's focus on the deadline, because having a deadline is one of the most important pillars of success. And make sure that we talk about my five pillars of success before we end this call, because it's really key for me to walk through all of them. But I'm going to skip ahead and give a sneak peek of it and let everybody know that the most important one is having a deadline in place. So a deadline does several things for us. First of all, it spurs us to initial action. So, you know, we have inertia to any activity, whether it's, you know, raking the lawn in the fall, or whether it is writing the book, or whether it's even starting a workout on a daily basis, or even if it's, you know, taking out the garbage. We always have this inertia that we have to get over. But if there's a deadline and the deadline has real consequences, then it will spur us to take action. So that's key, because if you have a deadline but there's actually no consequences for you missing the deadline, then there's no real deadline, right? Because if the IRS said, hey, the deadline for your taxes is April 15th, but if you miss it, don't worry. You know, no one's going to care. But there's consequences for missing your deadline and your filing date with the IRS. And that's why that deadline is so powerful. And we, you know, most of us stick to it. So there has to be consequences when you set a deadline. And we can talk about consequences and accountability, because those are kind of tied into each other as soon as I get through the second and third part of the deadline. So another part and powerful part of the deadline is if you have a deadline, whether it's 21 days or 60 days or 90 days or even 10 days or even 24 hours, if you're doing something that's not the most enjoyable thing in the world, but you're about halfway through, then you can start to say, you know what, I've come this far, I'm not going to stop. Plus, you can say, well, I'm on the home stretch now and I see the light at the end of the tunnel. You have that motivation. You're like, I've done this much work, I'm not going to, you know, lose this. You know, it's an opportunity cost here. I don't want to throw all that good work away. So that's the second power of the deadline, knowing that it's going to end soon. You know, when you're running a marathon and you hit the wall, or you're halfway through even, you think, you know what, we're at least halfway through, we can't quit now. And then the third part of the deadline, the most powerful part of the deadline, is that there's a finish line, that you see the finish line. And as you see that finish line, you may not physically run faster in the marathon, but you feel like you're running faster because you see that finish line. You go, oh, I'm almost there. Got to keep going. And another very powerful place that people can use deadlines, especially in their businesses, is in a sale. So I just recently had a sale in my business, and the price was increasing at midnight. And the number of people that buy in the final few hours is more than buy on the first day of the sale. Even if you give them incentive to buy on the first day, they still wait to the last minute, because that's our stupid human trick, is procrastination. Right?
Yeah.
We wait till the
last
minute.
I'm one of those people. I have actually put a timer on so I could get up at midnight to do something. It's bizarre.
Well, you know, this is a really great example of Christmas, right? I mean, what day is Christmas?
25th, every year.
Every
Without
year.
Fail.
And, yeah, and what day and days are the malls packed? The 23rd and 24th.
24th,
we know
I know.
Yes.
I won't go grocery shopping. If I don't have it in my kitchen, it doesn't get served. I'm not going out there. Because I know that Christmas is coming on the 25th.
Exactly. So, you know, we just wait until the last minute. And so if, you know, business owners that are listening, you need to remind people that the sale is ending. So just a real specific example, I run online businesses where we have sales on our products that people have to buy through our website. And I just had one that ended last night. And, you know, I told my team members we need to send an email out at 8 o'clock at night to tell people that they need to buy. And my team was like, well, we sent out an email at 10 o'clock in the morning. Why would we need to send another email out at 8 o'clock at night? They know the deadline's coming. And I said, trust me. And sure enough, because we sent out that email, we doubled the number of people that bought because they need that final reminder. They need to know that the deadline is coming. And when they do, when they know that, they take action because that's what the deadline gets us to do. So the deadline, again, is powerful in three ways. First of all, it spurs us to initial action to overcome that initial inertia. Second, it keeps us going through troubled times. You know, we're like, oh, man, I don't want to eat chicken and broccoli again today, but I've only got 3 days left. I'm going to do it. And then finally, as you get closer and closer to the finish line, you move faster and faster and faster. So those are the three ways that the deadline can help you write that book. You just have to make sure there's consequences. And, you know, if you have somebody who's, you know, a publisher and they have a demand date that you have to have it done, well, then you're going to get that done. But if you don't have that, if you're doing it self-publishing, then you need to set something up. So it depends on how you're motivated. If you're motivated by having something, a reward, like if you get it done by April 1st, then you get to go to Disneyland, then by all means, set that up. But if you are motivated by punishment, then you might have to set it up that if you don't get it done by April 1st, then you have to donate $500 to, you know, the political party that you don't like. So, you know, there's always a way. Yeah.
That would do it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to set up
any political party, really. I'm not giving money to any politician. That's just all there is to it.
There you go. So you just need to set up some types of consequences associated with the deadline. Because, again, if there is no consequence to the deadline, then we're kind of going to ignore it. But it can also be just with a friend. Like you can say to a friend, hey, I promise you I'm going to get this done by a certain date. And if you don't, and you really don't want to disappoint that friend, then that's consequence enough. So that would be like an accountability partner. An accountability partner is someone who can really, really be the secret ingredient to keeping you on track for any goal in life, whether you want to, you know, get fit again and you need an exercise accountability partner, or whether you want to write that book, or whether you want to, you know, read your Bible, or whatever it is that somebody listening wants to do. They should have a daily or weekly accountability check-in with somebody that they do not want to disappoint. And if you have that in place, man, you can really change your habits. You can, you know, achieve great goals. You can really do a lot of things, because if you choose the right person that you do not want to disappoint, you're going to stick to your promises, because no one likes to be a hypocrite.
And that's key, isn't it? Because I have had accountability partners and partnerships, and honestly, we always, almost always, manage to say, oh, no, it's okay. We'll do it next week. I understand what's going on. And we find ways to aid and abet each other in ducking out. And I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of fed up with that.
Yeah, you have to find the right one. And uh-huh. I will tell you that it has been huge to me in my personal life, because, you know, about 10 years ago, when I was a younger man, I was, you know, a little bit blunt with people. I was curt. You call me rude or a jerk. And I had friends who were my business partners and who were my coaching partners at the time who would pull me aside and say, listen, you can't be like that. And the good thing was, is these guys who were my business partners and my coaching partners were like brothers to me. And so they told me that, and then I looked at them and I'm like, I do not want to disappoint these guys. I do not want to get the stare of death from my business partner when I say something that is rude to somebody. And so that accountability to those guys, because I did not want to disappoint them, allowed me to change my ways. And if it was anybody else, if it wasn't one of those three guys, it happened to be three of my best friends, if it wasn't those people, if it was anybody else, I would have been like, oh, I don't really care what they think. But I really cared what these guys thought. And so if somebody out there is saying, well, yeah, I just can't find that right accountability partner, you might have to hire a coach, and then at least you have skin in the game monetarily. Or you keep on looking for somebody who you look up to as a mentor, as a big brother, as a father figure, or a mother figure, or, you know, a sister, whatever it is. And you look up to that person like, you know what, I said I'm going to do something, and I'm not going to let this person down. And until you have that level of accountability, you'll always be able to find the weasel clause, you know, the weasel way out. And then you're always going to be frustrated. You know, you have to find, you know, it's just like a deadline. If you don't have a real deadline and you don't have a real accountability partner, we're going to find ways out. And we all can do that. And listen, I've done that too.
We did. I mean, we used the holidays as an excuse. I mean, one of my accountability partners is really seriously going through hell. She really is. Her husband has cancer. They're going through chemo and radiation. My brother just, came out of a 6-week coma. He's going through all kinds of stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'll be honest with you, we used those unabashedly, and we knew we were doing it, and we let each other get by with it. And yesterday, I called everybody. I said, we're not doing this anymore. I don't care who's dying. We're going to do this. So it's a little rude, but sometimes you just have to say, okay, now we're through. We're making excuses to ourselves and to each other. This is unacceptable.
You're right. You're right. I mean, you have to go through a period of time where the expectations change in a situation like that. Like, I'm like, okay, but now we've dealt with things, and us, not doing. Eventually, we have to get back to work. We have to draw the line somewhere for us to do something. And so, here's an extreme case. I remember years ago when I still followed the NFL and football, there was a guy who played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he was the kicker. And his daughter died on like a Wednesday, and he didn't miss the game on Sunday. Now, some people look at that and go, that is ridiculous. How can, that guy should be doing that? And I'm not saying that that's what everybody should do. I'm just saying that he drew a line. He drew a line and said, I made a promise to this team. I want to be there for the team. I'm going to, make all the arrangements. Obviously, he's going to grieve, and he's going to be there for his family, but he's still going to play that game. And that is an extreme example. But it's just an example that we all need to consider, that we have to draw the line somewhere. Because, you could be 6 months from now, still making excuses. But you drew the line yesterday. You had the conversation, and you communicated it well. And you set expectations. And that is just a leadership move. Being decisive, clearly communicating, and clearly communicating expectations. And then everybody can discuss it and about how they feel. But what you did was make the decision. And a lot of times people are just looking for someone to make that decision. So I think you did the right thing because you got everybody back on track.
I hope I did. But if I didn't, I tried, and I know I'm back on track. And I think that both of my two accountability partners are. There's one I'm a little iffy on. That will be her decision, but we're moving forward. We're not going to make any more, I can't do it because I'm tired. That's not an excuse. That's not acceptable.
No.
We're always tired, right?
Yeah.
We're always, looking for that little bit more energy. But I've got things that I want to do this year, and the things that I want to do are in line with the two things that, the things that my accountability partners want to do, and part of it overlaps. We have to show up or do something different, and that decision has to be made now. I'm not going another week or month or 2 or 3 months going, what the heck? I'm just not.
Right. Yeah, and this is a good segue into those five pillars of success or five pillars of transformation that I mentioned before. And I talk about these a lot in my book, The Perfect Day Formula. And I learned these five pillars from my weight loss transformation contest. So as you mentioned in the introduction, I was in the fitness world for a long time. And I ended up having, in 2007, I started these weight loss before and after transformation contests. People are very familiar. You see the before photo of someone, they lose some weight, they have an after photo. And the thing is, they also, in our contest, they wrote a little 300-word essay about how they changed mentally and, you know, what they did and the diet they used and all this stuff. And I read hundreds of these. And then I noticed that there was a common theme of the people that won the contest, the people that stuck through and went through all obstacles and, you know, that won even though you wouldn't have expected them to win. And I call these the five pillars of transformation or the five pillars of success, because I then realized they weren't just only related to weight loss. You could use them to make more money. You could use them to find the home of your dreams. You could use them to find the love of your life, to write a book, all these things. So they go like this. The first pillar is better planning and preparation than ever before. Better planning and preparation than ever before. So let's apply these five pillars to your book writing. All right, if we want to do better planning and preparation than ever before in order to finish this book, what it means is, in addition to knowing the general outline of the book, every night what you should do is sit down and do a couple bullet points for the chapter you want to write tomorrow morning, so that when you wake up in the morning, you can go right to that chapter, that blank, that document. You can open it up, and there's a couple of bullet points or probing questions that'll help you write. Instead of you opening up a big, you know, a blank document and you sitting there and going, man, I got writer's block. No, but if you do that planning and preparation in advance, it makes the writing easier. Much like if somebody wanted to lose weight, they would do better planning and preparation of their meal plan. They would say, okay, this is the nutrition program I'm going to follow for the next 6 weeks, and here's the grocery list. So on Saturday, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to buy all the stuff at the store, and then I'm going to spend 2 hours preparing these meals so I have all of my meals prepared for the next 5 days. That's better planning and preparation than ever before, and that's the first pillar of success. The second pillar is professional accountability. So we talked a lot about accountability, but I hadn't used the word professional accountability until now. And the reason why I use this is because there was a weight loss study from Stanford University done back in the 1990s, and what they found was when someone was accountable to a professional, a doctor, a nutritionist, or a personal trainer, they had better results than when they were just accountable to a friend. And this overlaps with what you and I have been talking about how, you know, some accountability partners, if they're just your friend, you end up allowing each other to have excuses. But if you are going to your doctor and that's your accountability partner, then you're going to take more action. So in the business realm, that might be hiring a coach. It might be, you know, if you want to become a virtual assistant, you would go and hire you. You know, he's like, how do I become a virtual assistant? You know, how do I build a business on that? You might go and you want to go and hire a coach. And that's what I did when I started my online businesses. I hired online business coaches, and they gave me the accountability that I needed because I was paying good money. And I don't want to, like, not do the work and not show up to our coaching call and say, yeah, I didn't do that work that you gave me last time. And they would just be disappointed. So I made sure I always did work. So professional accountability, because I call these people the coach in your life, because your coach is going to give you two things that no one else can do. They're going to give you expert advice, and they're going to give you that no holds barred, no excuses accountability. If you don't follow through, they're going to sit you down and say, listen, you didn't follow through. Why not? How can we avoid this in the future? Does that make sense how important professional accountability is?
Listen, I firmly believe in having coaches and mentors. Seriously believe in it. And the thing is, I mean, with most coaching, you can't just go on and on and on and hope, you know, they'll keep taking your payment and letting you slide. They have dates, too. I mean, most coaching programs are, they're not open-ended, are they? They may be 6 months. They may be 9 months. They may be a year. But when you're done, you're done. And you better have hoped that you got something out of it, or your coach is never going to take you back, because you failed him or her as well.
Yeah, and the coach wants the clients to get results so that they can
absolutely
say, hey, listen. Yeah, absolutely. So that's great. So the third pillar is what's called positive social support. Now, positive social support can be considered like the cheerleaders in your life. So let's use the running a marathon example here. So professional accountability is the running coach that gave you the program that you check in with on a weekly basis. he's got the expert advice or she's got the expert advice, and she checks in to make sure that you're getting results. Now, the positive social support, those are just the people on the side of the road as you run the marathon, and they're going, you can do it, you can do it. Now, that's not expert advice, obviously, and if you miss a training session, they'll just say, ah, don't worry about it, you know, get back on track. So it sounds like with you, some of your accountability partners, is you had more positive social support than you really did have an accountability partner, because they weren't holding you accountable, but they were, you know, trying to pick you up when you're feeling down, and they're like-minded, positive people. So that's what you want to do.
I'm guilty of all of that, too. I mean, I caught myself in that same swirl. It's like, oh, it's okay. Yeah, I understand. You're at the hospital, you know, going, you're watching him go through chemo. I get that. And with another one, she was moving and death. I mean, a lot of, truly, for the three of us, we had more catastrophes going on. It was almost sad. But still, there comes a point where you have to pull your panties up and be a big girl, right?
You remember the show The Little Rascals, the black and white TV show?
No, I've heard of it, but I,
you never watched
even
the
when
Rascals?
I was a kid, no, I don't watch TV. I get so bored. I fall asleep.
Okay. All right. Well, there was a TV show called The Little Rascals, and there was a main character. His name was Alfalfa, and he had funny hair. And on one of the episodes, and this is for, I don't know, this show's like from the 1930s or 50s. Well, not the 30s, maybe the 50s or something. And at one point, he gets in trouble, and his dad is giving him a spanking. So obviously, this is an old TV show, because you can't put that on TV anymore. But he puts a book down his pants, and before his father starts spanking him, his father says, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. And he meant that, you know, mentally. But then he spanks the boy, Alfalfa, and it actually does physically hurt the father more. The reason I tell that story is because as a good coach and accountability partner, it should hurt you. It should be difficult for you to hold somebody accountable. So you go back to your friend who's moving. It's easy for us to let them slide. Say, you're moving. Don't worry about it. Now, as a coach, you have to like go, I don't really want to say this, but, you know, you moving is not an excuse for you not doing X, Y, and Z. You know, you promised me you were going to do it. I mean, you basically, as a coach, you have to have difficult conversations that are going to hurt you as much as they're going to hurt the other person. It's going to be as difficult or uncomfortable for everybody. And that's the mark of a good coach, is having the difficult, uncomfortable conversations, much like a good leader in a business who has an underperforming employee has to have difficult conversations. And so that is a key to accountability, making sure that you have difficult conversations. Now, the positive social support, the third pillar of success, that's just being in the room, at a Tony Robbins event. Everybody's there, like, yeah, we're excited. Hey, I'm going to support you. You're awesome. Keep going. But that's not expert advice, and that's not true accountability. It's just having somebody there, being around like-minded people who are going to support your dreams. We all need those people. We all need those people. So that's the third pillar, the cheerleaders in your life. The fourth pillar of success, remember we talked about pillar number one is better planning and preparation than ever before. Pillar number two is professional accountability. That's your coach. Pillar number three is positive social support, the cheerleaders in your life. And pillar number four is the meaningful incentive. Now, when I started out putting these pillars in place, I thought any old incentive would do. Because if you take a look at my weight loss transformation contest, we pay out money. We give $1,000 or $2,000 to the winners. And I thought, hey, giving money, that incentive, that's good enough. That'll get somebody going. But the harsh truth about my contest, and this is embarrassing to admit, is about 75% of the people who would start would drop out after about 2 to 3 weeks. And I realized that the incentive of money is not meaningful. You know, after they go through a couple of tough days, be like, man, I just did another workout. I don't like this, and now I got to go and eat chicken and broccoli. Well, you know, unless you have a meaningful reason to stick to it, you're going to say, you know what, that guy can keep his $1,000. I'd rather go have a pizza today. Now, what I realized when I read the essays of the winners was that they usually would start out and say, you know, I got incentivized at first by your money. But what kept me going was, you know what, I'm 30 pounds overweight and I can't keep up with my kids. That's why I wanted to change. Or I just, you know, my doctor just told me that my cholesterol is through the roof. And if I don't change, I might only have a couple years left. That's a meaningful incentive. Those were the people who, even though they had, you know, they had everything going against them, like your friends, they still stuck with it. They still managed to overcome all the obstacles and make the change because it wasn't from their pocketbook. That's not where the incentive was. The incentive was from their heart. And so that was huge. That was a big lesson for me. And so everybody listening, whatever it is, whatever goal you set on that paper at the start, it has to be meaningful to you, meaningful to you. And, I mean, that can keep you going through the roughest times. Make sense?
Oh, yeah. So it's not somebody saying, hey, by the way, Susie, you need to lose weight. Well, you don't want to tell anybody that. That'll just tick them off and make them head for the
right,
baby parlor.
Right.
But the truth is, you have to probably drill down. I mean, we all want to lose weight or gain weight in some cases, get healthier. But I think you have to, and you're pointing this out, is drill down even further. Why do I want to be healthy? You know, is it for my children? Is it for me? Do I want to live longer? Do I, you know, want to get out of this chair and get outside more? What do I really want to do when I get healthier? So I think that if people were to sit down and just maybe go through 6 or 7 steps and drill down, ask themselves that same question multiple times, and you're going to come up with different answers every time. I've done it with myself. I've done it with other people. Keep asking that same question in different ways 6 or 7 times, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, and it wasn't the superficial answer you thought it was.
No, that's really, really great point. A friend of mine calls that peeling the onion, and you know, it's just asking why until you get to the real deep meaning. And
I read
recently. So
Dean Graziosi, I think is how you say his name. I'm reading his book right now.
Yeah.
He talks a lot about that.
Yeah, Dean's a friend of mine. I just spoke with him at an event recently, and so now I guess.
Did I say his
know,
name properly?
Dean Graziosi. That's correct. Yeah.
All right. Good for
yeah.
me. It's a great book.
Yeah, it is. The Millionaire Habits one, right?
Yep.
Or a different
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Millionaire
no, it's
Habits.
The Millionaire Habits, and I've got it on Audible as well. So not only am I reading it, I'm listening to it. So I'm making
Wonderful.
Sure that I get everything he's got to say.
There you go. Now, I would turn the tables on you and say, you're writing this book. What's the meaningful incentive? And so after this call, I encourage you to sit there and maybe ask yourself a few of those questions, because if you're if you're struggling and putting it off, you have to think, who out there needs this book? I'm writing it for them. I want to change these people's lives. And every single day that goes by that this book isn't written, my goodness, those people are struggling. And you know what? While I say this, I'm writing a book about overcoming anxiety, and it's done, but I haven't gone through and finished the edits on it. And I realize here I am a hypocrite saying, telling you to write your book and not getting my book done. So this call, if beneficial for nothing else,
we can help each other.
There you go.
Right.
There you go.
Right,
very helpful.
Right.
So that brings
and
us
you know
now
what
to
you
the,
just said
yep.
about, people really needing this book. I mean, I am writing it for that very reason. And I think part of my angst with it is, how dare I think that people need what I've got to say? I mean, I'm almost feeling a bit of imposter syndrome. But when I look at the book and I look at the purpose of the book, it really is a needed book right now. So what in the heck am I sitting on it for?
Exactly.
So I will. I will do those exercises.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And I will do the same. We will race each other to get our books done. Because
there
mine is on anxiety, and I know so many people out there are struggling with anxiety, and I want to help them with it. So that circles us all the way down to the fifth pillar, which is the big deadline, and we covered that. The big deadline gets us going, keeps us going, and makes us go faster as the deadline comes closer. So sum it up, the 5 pillars of success, the 5 pillars of transformation that you can apply to any area of life. Like, again, you can apply to it to making money, to losing weight, to finding the love of your life, everything. It's just like plug and play, and it goes like this. Better planning and preparation than ever before, professional accountability, positive social support, a meaningful incentive, and the big deadline. And when you have those 5 things in place, you can accomplish anything. You can change any habit. You really can make big, big changes in your life. And so I was very fortunate to stumble across those from my clients, and now I'm sharing with them with the world.
But here's the thing, you took action. You recognized that it was there and you took action, which is, I think, something that people don't do enough of. And
oh,
yeah, I think
absolutely.
We're covering that, you know, have the accountability partners, have the awareness that you've stumbled across something, you know, that really is important and it does need to be shared. And
yeah,
it's never going to be perfect. I don't know about you. I'm a recovering, oh, I'm lying. I'm a trying to recover perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you
That's
talk
all right.
about anxiety. I give myself anxiety all the time because of that. And I don't consider myself an anxious person, but when something isn't just kind of right, I can almost feel it under my skin, like, ooh. I'm a picture straightener. I can go into, you know, these little, what do you call those houses when you go look at them in neighborhoods? What do you call those, the custom homes? The houses that aren't for sale, they're the ones that you walk into. But
the
anyway,
the model home.
I can feel it on the tip of my tongue. I have been known to try to straighten a picture that was glued to the wall. It's like, it's crooked. I can't stand it. If it's a millimeter off, I will spot it. It's the bane of my existence.
That's funny.
But perfectionism, it's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I used to have a habit where if I went into somebody's house and they had a magazine on the table, I had to read the magazine. Because I'm an information addict. And I need to read everything that is not glued down. So I've been able to overcome that too. But, you know, action is so important. I'm glad you brought this up. And I'm glad, you know, you talked a little bit about the anxiety, because everybody wakes up, you know, and has those days where like, oh my goodness, you know, they're going through something and they're like, oh my goodness, how am I going to get through this day? We got all these things, you know, we got this major problem going on. And, you know, I just read a great quote from Wayne Dyer, the late Wayne Dyer. And he said, you can worry all you want, but it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change anything. Only action changes stuff. And so I use this phrase a lot with my clients, and I kind of cribbed it from a couple of people, and it's action beats anxiety and motion beats meditation. Now, meditation has a role, but what it means is you could sit there and worry, or you can start taking action steps. I mean, listen, I had a day like this, not yesterday, maybe it was Tuesday of this week. You know, we were running a promotion in my business and that I mentioned earlier, and one of the emails went out with the wrong link. And that, you know, sent me down a spiral. It's like, oh, this is no good. And, you know, so we didn't make that many sales. And then it's like, oh, and then something else happened. And then I tried to sell somebody on something else, and they said no. And then I tried to sell somebody else on something, and they said no. And I was really, you know, sad by the end of the day. But if I woke up the next morning and I just, you know, thought about all my failures, then I would have just, you know, my wheels would have turned, and I just would have been more anxious and more upset. But instead, I woke up the next day, maybe it was Wednesday, and I sent an email to somebody, and the next thing you know, I sold something there. And then out of the blue, you know, one of the things that I had been working on in November, a person said, hey, you know, that conversation we had in November, I'm ready to buy now. And then out of, you know, I did something else, and another positive result came in. So action beats anxiety, and motion beats meditation. Because if I would have done nothing, my day would have gotten worse. But I went out, and even though things were piled up against me, I went and did something, and it got me results. And so action is the key, you know, to writing your book, to making the sale, to losing the weight, to, you know, building the relationships in your family, whatever it is, you have to go and do something right now. You have to go and do something. It's so important.
Oh, I agree with you. And sometimes, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this, sometimes the most important thing for me to do is just walk off. Just walk away from it, whatever problem it is or whatever, you know, HTML code I can't quite work out, I will walk off. And I speak HTML code. I dream in short codes. It's a sad thing, but I do. But I will just go outside. And, you know, I live in a part of the country where we have basically two seasons, hot and hotter in hell, and that's all you've got. But right now. Or the mud season, which happens in the summertime, but it doesn't matter. Right now it's actually pretty cold, and I will go outside, and I've got this wonderful backyard that I just truly adore, and I will go out there, kick off my shoes. It doesn't matter. Hot, cold, muddy, doesn't make any difference to me. And I will get underneath my pecan trees and I will just ground myself to the earth and breathe. And then I go back in and I tackle something, but I have to do that to just clear my mind and I think clear my muscle memory, my body memory of being hunched over and ticked off and
right.
You know, glaring at my keyboard. You know, you have to almost go out and clear that. And it may only take a few minutes until my feet freeze and I'm back inside, but it gave me that break. It gave me that little break in that, you know, oh, poor, poor, pitiful me thing that I had going on. And we all do it.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up because there's a book that I really love. It's called Daily Rituals by a young man named Mason Curry. And what he did was he researched the daily schedules of some of the most successful and prolific people in history, everyone from Beethoven to Charles Dickens to Charles Darwin, so many writers and authors. And in this book probably profiles about 100 people. And one of the most common things that was done, especially a couple hundred years ago, was that these people would work in the morning for about 4 hours, and then they would go for a two-hour walk. So Charles Dickens would write his very famous novels at his desk. He was very militant about his working hours from about 8 until noon. And then he would have lunch, and then he would go for a 2 or 3 hour walk around London. And very much like you solved the problems or just took the break from it, what he would do is he would pick up ideas for his writing the next morning. And you take a look at so many people who have done this in history, and you start to see this coming back in employee talks and work-related articles these days about the power of walking meetings. And it's so important because if you try and solve a problem sitting at your computer desk, your brain operates in a specific way. But if you get away from your computer, your brain operates in a different way. Very much like when you're in the shower and you have all these ideas, it's because your brain is operating in a different way than when you're sitting in front of the computer. And it's so important to take those breaks, to walk away from it. As you said, that's where you solve the problem. Remember, I don't know, when I was growing up, there was always this picture of, you know, Newton under the apple tree and the apple falling on his head. Well, maybe it's because he was just out in nature, you know, he was away from his work desk that he was able to solve some of these problems and, you know, the great mathematical problems and stuff that he solved. And so that is a great lesson from history. Get away from the desk. Get out of your work area. I mean, even when you're traveling and you know, you're going to the airport or you're on an airplane, people will say to me, man, I got so much work done on the plane. I was so creative. And again, it's because you're away from your regular workplace where you have all the distractions and you have a certain way of doing things. But when you're outside of your regular environment, that's where the magic happens. And you found that out just by trial and error. And I mean, it's something that I do as well. I have a dog and I walk him a couple times a day and I get such great ideas when I'm out there and I solve the problems.
And I have to. I mean, I really have to just get up, walk off. I may go cook. I love to cook. I may go no further than my kitchen and I may start putting together a gumbo. And then all of a sudden I've got an idea for a website. You never know. But I read an article the other day, I think it was, about Steve Jobs, who is absolutely known for making people trail around him as he walked blocks. You know, he would say, okay, you want to talk, but we're going to go. And I'll find it and send it to you if you haven't seen it. But apparently he was just absolutely known. If you wanted to have any kind of a meeting with him, you better have your running shoes on because he was going to go outside and walk. You could go with, but you weren't going to have a meeting with him in his office more often than not.
Oh, that's
which
great.
I found fascinating. Yeah, I'll find it and send it to you because I thought, okay, that I knew this about, you know, people in history. I didn't know that it had a more recent application in Steve Jobs of all people. Of course, that makes sense. He had a brilliant mind. He probably had to exercise it a lot.
He seems like a
hyperkinetic
guy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, very, very much so. But, you know, he didn't care if you didn't want to walk. He was going to walk, I guess. And,
you know,
that's how he got things done, you know.
Yeah. There's another interesting point about the walking meeting. And parents listening to this should appreciate this because it's either research or just anecdotal that it's easier to have a difficult conversation in a car or while walking with somebody rather than sitting at a table eye to eye, face to face. So, for example, you know, say you're a teenager and you are not getting along. Well, if you sat them down at the kitchen table, you might not make as much progress if you, you know, were driving them to sports and you were trying and you had the conversation, because now they don't have to look you in the eye. And it's easier, apparently, for people to have conversations when they're either walking side by side or when one person's driving and one person's in the passenger seat. And it's just a little less awkward and people feel a little bit more comfortable. And that's another benefit to the walking meeting. So you get out there, you get your creative juices flowing, you get some exercise, and it seems easier for people to have conversation when they're side by side rather than face to face. So that's another interesting point that people can consider.
Yeah, and it makes sense because when you're sat down at the table, you pretty much expect to have a butter knife wrapped over your knuckles, right? You don't do that.
It's definitely like an opposition effect right there.
Right, that's exactly right. Okay, and one thing, and this goes back a little bit to what you were talking about earlier, and I think I read somewhere that maybe it's a quote or a meme that you'd put out, that basically if you start your to-do list in the morning, you're already behind. That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I truly believe that. And you know, I was thinking of that when you were talking about the book stuff before, because if you just wake up in the morning and say, oh, you know, I need to write that book today or write that book chapter, well, you don't have that plan in place. Yeah. And a lot of people also spend, you know, 20 or 30 minutes on their to-do list in the morning getting organized. But that, you know, you just wasted some of the most valuable and precious parts of the day. So what I teach people is a three-step process that they do at the end of their workday, or it can be, you know, after dinner, not right before bed, but, you know, after dinner so you get ready for the next day. And you do three things. The first one is called a brain dump. So you take out a piece of paper and you write down all the things running through your head, you know, all the things you want to do tomorrow, all the people you want to contact, all the errands you want to run, and you write all that stuff down. You just totally empty your mind and you fill up that paper. And then you take a look at all the stuff on there and you prioritize it into a to-do list. So you have, you know, your top two or three activities that must get done tomorrow, or maybe it's just one thing, or maybe it's three, but not more than three. But these are like the most important things that absolutely have to get done tomorrow. And then everything else under that, you say, it'd be great if I could do this and this, this, and this. And now you have your to-do list from that brain dump. So you've done that. And if you stop here, it'd be great. But you can go one step further and do some process planning. So I've talked about this a little bit with the better planning and preparation and in reference to your book. So if you woke up the next morning and said, I wrote down that my number one priority is to write chapter 11 for my book, but you sat down at a blank document, it's going to be tough. You know, you might have that writer's block. But if you did a little bit of process planning, which means a little bit of preparation in advance, give yourself some cues, maybe write a question down or two, a couple of bullet points, and say, hey, listen, when I wake up in the next tomorrow morning and I go down and I open up that document, there's going to be some cues here. It's going to make the process a whole lot easier to jump into. And that is actually the magic part of it. Now, another example would be if somebody wanted to exercise first thing in the morning. They can write down on their to-do list, exercise first thing in the morning. But if you wake up and it's kind of chilly in the air and, you know, your exercise clothes are in the drawers across the bedroom, you're like, maybe I'll just sleep here and I won't exercise. But if you've laid out the exercise clothes beside your bed, you've made the process a little bit smoother and it's easier for you to get into the habit or activity that you want to do. So keep that in mind, whether it's, you know, if you want to read the Bible, you open up the Bible and you put it on the kitchen table so that you go down there and it's right there for you to get started first thing in the morning. Or if you want to practice a sales script or, you know, work on a PowerPoint presentation, you make sure that it's all queued up and nice and easy for you to get into so that there's fewer hurdles, fewer obstacles in the way. So that all goes back to doing your to-do list the night before and then doing a little bit of process planning to make the actions go smoother.
I've been listening very carefully to you, and I don't know if you know this or not, but you just became my accountability partner.
There you go.
I will be listening to this going, he said I could do it, I can do it.
Well, that means you have to update me every week.
You've given me some great, great ideas, and now I can't let you down. So I'm kind of stuck. I have to write the darn book now.
I'm right there with you, so we'll get this done.
We will. Listen, and thank you so much. I mean, you really have given me some great ideas. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, you talk about the importance of vision and values in determining your day. And I think we've covered a little bit of that, but do you want to go into that just a bit further? We still have about 5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I work with people, we do these workshops or they read my book, and I tell them to create their vision and their values first, because your values and your vision determine every decision going forward. So a lot of people come to me for coaching and they say, and I ask them about their values and their vision for their life. They say, oh, it's family first. And I say, okay, tell me what you do every day. Well, I work 13 hours a day. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You're totally misaligned. And so that's why we have to be very clear about what matters to you for your health, your wealth, your family, and your personal development. You know, tell me what you want to achieve in the next 10 or 20 years. Those are your values. Okay, great. Now let's write out a 3-year vision for your life. Oh, I want to be living on this street and this house with, you know, these cars in the garage, and I want my kids to be involved in these activities, and I want to be spending all day Sunday with them and no electronics. Okay, great. Now we know your values and your vision. That's going to determine your 90-day plan. It's going to determine your 24-hour workday. It's going to determine everything. So we have to work with those first. Otherwise, I can build you a great day where you're really productive, but if it stops you from enjoying your family, then, you know what, we did it the wrong way. We need to go and work from the top down. That's really what it's about.
I think a lot of people, and I've got the sniffles. I hope I haven't been sniffing on you.
No, you're quite all right.
Okay. They do kind of go, okay, you know, I'm going to work, and I'll spend Sunday with my kids. There's going to come a Sunday when those kids are doing something different and they're just not available to you. I've seen that time and time again. They grow up very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to convince people, look, you know, do kind of the, you know, the old-fashioned way, work a few hours in a day and then, you know, walk around for a few hours. Do you meet a lot of resistance when you tell people you've got to rework this? This is not working for you now, and I can just about guarantee you won't be working for you in 5 years.
Yeah, so what I do is most people are kind of like locked on this idea that Monday has to look like Wednesday and Wednesday has to look like Thursday. But what I do is I teach people, like, no, listen, we can front load your work week. Like, you know, nothing's really going on Monday or Tuesday for most people. So it's okay if we work a little bit extra on Monday and work a little bit extra on Tuesday so that we can take Friday afternoon off, or that we can be fully present and not work at all on Saturday or Sunday. So really what I do is I customize every single person's schedule that I work with one-on-one. And we work around, like, hey, what is, you know, what are your vision and your values, and what do you not want to miss, and so on and so forth, so that we figure out exactly how every single day of their week should look. You know, some people end up working Saturdays because they're more creative on Saturdays, and they might get twice as much work done in 3 hours on a Saturday morning than they would on 6 hours on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, okay, well, let's schedule your week like that to really leverage what I call your magic time, your most creative hours. And so that's one thing that people listening can go and say, magic time, what's this all about? And do a time journal of your day and figure out when you are most productive, and then make sure that you block that time for your number one work activities. And that alone can double or triple your productivity, that idea. Just being cognizant of when you are most productive and then doing your most important tasks during that time can triple your productivity, and that is key. So that's what we do, is we just go through and we figure out everything about somebody's life, and then we just build something custom that doesn't look like a 9-to-5, 5-day-a-week, you know, job. That's not going to work for most people. And if you have the luxury of being able to build your own schedule, as many entrepreneurs do, then let's do that and maximize and leverage how you operate best.
And, you know, I have found out through trial and error that my magic times are very early in the morning. I'm a very early riser, and I'm very alert and, you know, full of whatever my grandmother used to call it. But
But
then again, you know, during the day I get tired. I get, you know, a little bit cranky sometimes. But then after dinner, after the dinner hour, about 7 o'clock at night, I'm right back at it. My creativity just shows up big for some reason, and I take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You are just working on the right schedule for you.
Yeah, I have to. Otherwise, the kind of work I do, you know, you can burn out very, very quickly. I know if anybody's in the chat room, you're about to lose us, but we will still, you know, keep recording for another couple minutes. Well, 10 seconds. I lied. So, Craig, do you have one more minute that you can stay with me? Because I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things I've heard you say is that, and this is the number one thing that people can do right now to move ahead in any season of life, and I assume that you mean, you know, whether they're millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, wherever they are, what is that secret sauce? What is the thing that they can do?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's spending 15 minutes first thing in the morning, whatever time you get up, it doesn't matter, but just making sure you have 15 minutes where you are working on your number one priority in life. And I prefer that people go down to their kitchen table before everybody else is up in their house, and they sit there with pen and paper, and they say, you know what, here's my number one opportunity in life. I'm going to work on brainstorming how to take advantage of it. Or maybe they have a problem. Maybe they're a couple thousand dollars in credit card debt, and they sat there. If they sat there 15 minutes every single day, 6 days a week, that's 72 hours in a year of focusing on their number one problem. And if they have that credit card debt, they're going to get out of that debt faster if they have that 15 minutes every morning focusing on how to overcome that problem. And if you spend that 15 minutes writing a book, then you're going to finish that book faster than if you tried to fit it in over the course of the day. So 15 minutes, first thing in the morning, get up a little bit earlier. Doesn't have to be hours earlier, just a little bit earlier than everybody else. No distractions. No electronics, pen and paper, and you can solve your problems and take advantage of your opportunities.
I love that. And I'm a pen and, you know, I always have pads. I have these little, I buy them at the Dollar Tree, those little, they look like marble, what do you call those, composition books? I have them all over the house. I have pens all over the house. Yeah, I work virtually. I do everything online, but I still have to write things out. So that's perfect for someone like me.
Very good.
Well, listen, Craig, this has been wonderful. Where can people find you on the web before I let you go?
Yeah, so the best place is my favorite. My website is earlytorise.com, and then I have another website, craigballantyne.com. And then on social media, my favorite social media is Instagram, and it's Real Craig Ballantyne on Instagram as well. So people can find me there, or they can just simply send me an email at craig@godfather.com.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Early to Rise, hasn't that website been around for a very long time?
Yeah, for 20 years now. So it was started by the gentleman who I mentioned at the start of the call, a guy named Mark Ford, who wrote a lot of his books under the name of Michael Masterson. So he wrote a great business book called Ready, Fire, Aim. And
I knew that because I have been subscribed to Early to Rise since, oh God, the advent of the internet.
Yeah, yeah. He started in 2000, and I bought it from him in 2011.
Nice. Because when I saw that's not the same person. And then I did a little bit of digging and went, okay, I see what – because I was on that email list for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good stuff. So I am so glad to see that you have taken it over and it still lives.
Well, thank you.
Good. I'm stuttering now. I'm looking at your website going, oh, I remember so much of all this stuff. You know, I probably have some of those old newsletters and emails from back in the day because I've kept a lot of them. If I do, I'll send you one or two of them. Okay, well, Craig, thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been a genuine pleasure chatting with you, and I know our audience got a lot out of it, and you are welcome to come back anytime. If you feel like you have something to say, give me a call, and I'll get you booked in.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Listen, everybody, you can find us in iTunes. This show will be rendered in about an hour, and you can listen, but take us along. Look for us in iTunes, Your Partner in Success Radio, and we will be there on your success journey. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.